Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Thursday, the 17th of February, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330, and we're always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We are live weekday mornings from 9 to 10, then we re-air our program from 7 to 8 in the evening here on KJLL. The lineup for today's show includes a conversation with the director of the victim advocate group Homicide Survivors, a newsmaker interview with Arizona Attorney General Tom Horn. We'll talk with our border contributor Keith Rosenblum, plus a conversation with best-selling writer Leslie Marmon Silko. The Buckmaster Show is primarily an interview-driven talk show, but there is always room for listener comments and questions. Call us on the Buckmaster Show live line at 529-3508. Well, the three major funds set up for the victims of the January 8th Tucson shootings have joined forces to create something called the Tucson Together Fund. All victim requests will now go first to Homicide Survivors, the nonprofit Pima County victim advocate organization headed by Carol Gaxiola, who joins us in studio on the Buckmaster Show. Carol, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this consolidation of funds. The Arizona Daily Star, in their opinion piece editorial this morning, congratulates the three organizations on coming together to form, consolidating in basically a larger pot that would be managed by the very respected local agency Community Foundation for Southern Arizona. Tell us a bit about your piece of the puzzle. The originally was called the Tragedy in Tucson Victims Fund.
Well, we've always had a fund, a victims fund for victims of homicide. Due to the unusual nature and long-term needs of the victims of the January 8th shooting, we established a separate fund. It became clear as we got into this, working with victim services folks, people in the community, worked with Safeway Fund, the KVOA fund that went through banks and credit unions, that we needed to work together to make sure, first of all, we weren't duplicating, and second of all, that the funds could be used to their very best advantage to help all the victims. And we came up with the plan to consolidate the funds. The long-term nature of this journey that these folks are on due to two levels of litigation and just the complicated nature of the whole situation means that we're looking 6 to 10 years down the line where victims may have needs to assist with transportation. Maybe they are triggered back into needing some counseling. And unfortunately, the funds that are normally available to victims would not suffice. So it made sense to put all the funds together to establish a committee that will decide on which awards to make to which requests.
And Bill Carnegie is the chair. A lot of folks know Bill here in town. Bill is, of course, the executive director of the Community Food Bank, and he's kind of chairing this Tucson Together Fund review board, and then they'll look at all the requests.
Right, and we're involved because we are the 501c3 that can actually make payments to individuals. And based on expenses that they have related to this, to the January 8th event.
So the fund will provide helping pay funeral expenses, counseling, lost wages, be able to help. As you said, there is going to be some long-term needs. So this is going to be an ongoing deal.
Right. And victim compensation program will pay some of the needs now, but not all of the requests qualify for that fund. And our mission at Homicide Survivors is to help families stabilize so that murder has a lot of hidden costs that people don't even begin to consider. And our mission is to stabilize their lives to the level before the actual murder or in this case, because it was a mass event, people who were not necessarily that were hurt but didn't die during the event are still considered survivors of homicide.
Your folks were on the scene rather quickly, weren't they?
Yeah, well, I was at the hospital. As soon as I got word, I went directly to the hospital. And we work hand in hand with victim services. They had advocates and volunteer, very highly trained volunteer crisis workers. And there was one of their volunteers just happened to be shopping at the shopping center that day. So they were able to get on scene really quickly, get out to the hospitals, and we worked really well as a team. They were amazing folks. They brought in almost every volunteer that they had that was available, and so that we could give support to everyone there and help. Because when something like this occurs, everything's out the door. You don't know what to do.
You kind of throw away any kind of rule book,
right,
this is new ground, wasn't it?
And family members were arriving at the hospital all day long, and they didn't know where to go. We were trying to help them get connected to the right person and to get the information. Because what you need when this is occurring is accurate and clear information, and then just to help them have a place to be and to be waiting during this crisis time.
It's 13 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. We're speaking with the director of Homicide Survivors. It's a nonprofit Pima County advocate organization. Carol Gaxiola heads it up. I hope I pronounced your last name.
Oh, that's fine.
Is that correct?
Yeah,
give us
fine.
The correct pronunciation.
Well, there's several. Gaxiola or Gaxiola, that's fine.
When it's spelled Gaxiola, I guess that's open to a lot of room for interpretation.
Yeah, it is. A lot of people just call me Miss G.
Well, Carol, tell me about what you do other than dealing with this fund, because this is, of course, January 8th has captured everyone's attention, but there are other needs going on, certainly, for your organization.
Yes, and we've been in the community since 1982. We were incorporated in the mid-90s, and we're with the families as soon as a murder occurs and we can make contact with the family. We're there to help. Nobody is prepared for a funeral as a result of a murder. It's always a crisis situation. And so we're there to help the family through the journey, finding a funeral arrangement that respects their loved one. If there's an arrest, there's all kinds of procedures that happen through the court system. If there's no arrest, there's a lot of questions. You're dealing with law enforcement. And as you know, law enforcement's very, very busy. So we're there to help the families talk and answer questions and get information. And sometimes there's financial needs because they're not in the local area, and we can assist them with that.
Tell me about how the fund financially is doing, the Tucson Fund Together. What kind of money has been coming in?
We have been just amazed by the community response and how wonderful everyone in the community has been. And we've had many groups do fundraisers, just spontaneous fundraisers, from high school students to running clubs to just folks in different businesses. And we're really, really appreciative to the community. Being able to bring the funds together gives us a substantial pot of money to be able to begin to meet these long-term needs for the families.
Ballpark figure, what kind of money are we talking about?
Well, it is fluid, but
yes.
Like our fund right now is approaching $80,000. And I can't speak for the other funds, but
okay. But
we're doing it. And every day checks are coming in from all across the country, even some foreign countries. So it's just been an amazing outpouring of support.
And folks can get more information. They can make a donation online, I believe.
Right.
At TucsonTogetherAZ.com. Is that
That's correct.
What they should
yes.
Go to?
And there's all the funds that are out there, because some people want to donate to a memorial fund. Some people want to donate to the victim fund or to a scholarship fund. And they're all there, so it makes it easy. And the reason we did that is there were scam funds beginning to pop up. And it's really difficult to know which ones are the actual funds that are being dedicated to these purposes. So if you go to that website, then you can know which funds are the ones that will make good use of your donations.
Okay, and the name of the fund again is Tucson Together Fund. So that website is TucsonTogetherAZ.com. And if you'd like to make a donation or even just learn more about, I guess you're always looking for volunteers too.
We certainly are. And what we're trying to really develop right now is a court advocacy volunteer program, because we have a lot of families that are going to court and they need someone there to pay attention to what's going on, help them understand the process. And we do train people. We need them available during the weekdays, during court hours.
Okay, Carol Gaxiel.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us from the nonprofit Pima County Victim Advocate Organization that is known as Homicide Survivors. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me today.
It's my pleasure. It's 18 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. We will be going to Hermosillo, Mexico on the Buckmaster Show live line to talk with our border correspondent, Keith Rosenblum. That's next.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, Repair and Restoration Services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowland Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Coming up on 22 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show, at the bottom of the hour, we'll be speaking with Arizona Attorney General Tom Horn, who told an audience of border security experts in Phoenix yesterday that the Mexican drug cartels are now an escalating threat to the United States. On the Buckmaster Show, live line is Keith Rosenblum. He's the Buckmaster Show contributor on the border, and he is south of the border in Hermosillo. He's a former senior border reporter for the Arizona Republic and former Sonora correspondent for the Arizona Daily Star. He's founder of the website MexLink. Keith, how you doing?
Hi, Bill. Good morning.
What do you think about Mr. Horn? Of course, we'll be asking him about his comments that he made yesterday that the Mexican drug cartels are now an escalating threat to the United States.
Well, I think escalating threat has been going on probably for 20 years. And I think what's happened now is we've moved from kind of a low tension, no win situation to a higher tension, no win situation. It's just I hate to sound so pessimistic, Bill, but it is an intractable, unsolvable situation, and we keep upping the ante, and the good guys keep thinking, ostensibly us being the good guys, that if we just buy a couple more armaments or do something more at the border, that we might be able to contain it. And then and then we find out that possibly the AK-47 that was used in the shooting of the Border Patrol agent a couple of weeks ago may have been purchased as part of a controlled sting operation out of Glendale or Phoenix. And so I continue to be a deep pessimist about any possibility of solving this, given the status quo. And what the Attorney General says certainly makes sense. And so what do we have now? Two sides more entrenching themselves than ever?
Well, Keith Rosenblum, I want to ask you not only about the shooting of the murder of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Special Agent Jaime Cepeda in Mexico just this week. It's just a constant litany of crime stories coming out of Mexico. And what does that, how does that translate for those of us that live in Tucson, Arizona, who would like to travel, say, to Sonora, where you are right now?
Well, I don't think it should make any difference whatsoever. I continue to be one of those people that believes that almost all of the violence, even though you read to the contrary from time to time, almost all of it is marked. That is, you have groups that go after specific groups. And so, in this case, the ICE agent who's traveling in diplomatic license plates, as we have in the U.S., by the way, and is not supposed to be stopped by any law enforcement, just winds up being executed in the middle of a federal highway. This was a planned attack. For somebody who's going to Bahia de Quino or Peñasco or San Carlos or Alamos or anywhere else in the interior, I mean, I'm on 30 years of traveling, traveling the highway when there was one lane, and now traveling with quota or, you know, toll roads and things like that. And I can tell you from seeing it at ground level that there is no danger whatsoever. I mean, there's just a every so often you read one of these horror stories, but that's what they are. They're isolated horror stories. And to me, the sad part is I divide our country into thirds, Bill. I say that a third is going to come to Mexico and enjoy themselves or do whatever they want to do, no matter what. A third is probably xenophobic or afraid or is just not going to do it no matter what. And it's that middle third that can be swayed and has to look at what it's being told. In this case, again, I go both ways. I have friends that come to and from all the time. There's nothing, and I do it at 2 in the morning. I try to cross the border because of the weights. I try to cross at 2 or 4 or 6 in the morning. But I do it at all hours. I do it as a pedestrian, as a motorist. My family does it. And I'm not on anybody's, I'm not on any Mexican tourism board's payroll. This is just, you know, seeing it from that standpoint. So, these incidents are so, but you know something? This is not the housewife from Marana or the carpenter from Sahuarita or you know, deciding to get away for a weekend. I would say you're safer traveling the 300 miles to Guaymas than you are traveling the 300 miles to Flagstaff.
And I should point out, Keith, that Nogales, Sonora, they have tried to really beef up the police presence with security cameras. Despite that, business owners are estimating sales have dropped about 75% since 2008 in Nogales, Sonora. But they are making an effort, aren't they?
Well, you wouldn't go either you would certainly diminish your going if what used to take you 5 minutes to do that is to come back, declare your citizenship, and say, I've got nothing to declare. I've got these pharmaceuticals or this, ceramic duck. So you now wait. Instead of being a five-minute wait, ICE has pushed things to where any wait to come into the U.S. now during the day is a half hour, sometimes an hour, 2 hours. So I don't attribute that to public safety concerns as much as I do as a slowdown. It's a deliberate slowdown by customs or by ICE for people. So that affects the tourism, but that's not a reason not to come to Mexico. There's one other thing that should be mentioned. That is, we now require the Mexican pharmacies can no longer give you some of the traditional things just over the counter. You have to also go see a doctor. So I think that's also been a natural erosion of people that went to Nogales. But it's more, I think of it as being a state of mind. And as I say, as somebody who goes to and from all the time and doesn't give it a second thought, the only reason I give it a second thought is because I don't want to devote two hours to getting back into the country, back into the U.S., that is.
I didn't realize there was that change now with the pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, that's the Mexican Secretaría de Salud, their health ministry, put into effect new rules, I want to say the beginning of like December maybe or November. And what it said essentially was that you now would have to get a prescription the same as you would in the U.S. So what some of them have done is there's some drugstores in Mexico now, a lot of them actually, that have gone to having an attending physician. So you can do, it's equivalent to what Walgreens has, you know, in the States where you go to your Walgreens and you now have medical services provided there. Well, these pharmacies actually have doctors that are working for them or with them. And so you can get it done in a jiffy anyway. Not all of them done, I think like a third or so. But that has been, has slowed down sales naturally. And by the way, I know that in the U.S. and in Mexico that there's some kind of reciprocity when it comes to having your prescriptions filled.
Keith Rosenblum, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for being on the Buckmaster Show, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you, Bill. Keep it up.
Thank you very much, Keith Rosenblum, who is the border contributor on the Buckmaster Show. As advertised, Tom Horn is coming up, and we'll talk more about Mexican cartels and what he calls an escalating threat to the U.S.
Got something on your mind?
The time has come for all of us to speak out.
Call in and let us know.
Now start talking.
Talk about how you feel.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Demonstrators in Libya call today a day of anger. Human rights groups say 16 people were killed in anti-government protests, but that has not been confirmed. Bahrain's army is patrolling the streets after three people there were killed in a police crackdown on protesters. The House voted today to extend three provisions of the Patriot Act that expire next month. The act was passed in 2001 to help fight terrorism. A new government study found about 6% of kids ages 12 to 14 drank alcohol in the past month. Dr. Peter Delaney, who worked on the study, explains why we should be worried.
We know that kids, when they start drinking before they're 15, they're five times as likely to have problems when they're an adult.
Detroit Tigers first baseman Miguel Cabrera was busted in Florida overnight on suspicion of drunk driving. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Hey, Kelly. So, who'd you hire to do your emails?
What? You know it's just me here.
Come on, I got your newsletter. Pretty fancy, photos, coupons. Come on, who is it?
Oh, no one, silly. I use Constant Contact.
Really?
With ConstantContact.com, it's so easy. They make me look like $1 million, and the emails really work.
Oh, yeah?
It got you in here today, didn't it?
Touché.
ConstantContact.com. Plans as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Don't ignore your prostate health. See your doctor for checkups and call for a free bottle of Beta Prostate. Beta Prostate has plant sterols shown to support healthy urine flow and healthy sleeping habits. New customers can get a free bottle of Beta Prostate. You only pay shipping and handling. Call 1-800-747-0319. Call now and try Beta Prostate for free. Call 1-800-747-0319. That's 1-800-747-0319.
Hey, Kelly. So, who'd you hire to do your emails?
What? You know it's just me here.
Come on, I got your newsletter. Pretty fancy, photos, coupons. Come on, who is it?
Oh, no one, silly. I use Constant Contact.
Really?
With ConstantContact.com, it's so easy. They make me look like $1 million, and the emails really work.
Oh, yeah?
It got you in here today, didn't it?
Touché.
ConstantContact.com. Plans as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Are you up for the challenge? It's the third annual Boot Camp Challenge, March 19th. Join Olympic athletes, local armed forces, and celebrities as we laugh, climb, crawl, walk, run, and work out boot camp style through a 5K run-walk obstacle course. To sign up as an individual or a team, go to beatcancerbootcamp.com or call 546-1601 for the Cancer Boot Camp Challenge, 7:30 Saturday morning, March 19th at Brandy Fenton Park. For strength, for health, for life, for fun.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinca Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinca Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Thirty-five minutes past the hour, this is the Buckmaster Show. Well, Arizona's Attorney General Tom Horn, who assumed his new post as the state's top legal officer on January the 3rd, has had a very busy couple of weeks, generating at least three headline-grabbing legal actions, including moving to oppose the EPA on greenhouse gas requirements, filing suit challenging the federal government on securing borders, and asking a federal appeals court this week to let Arizona stop providing insurance benefits for partners of gay workers. Arizona Attorney General Tom Horn joins us now on the Buckmaster Show live line. Mr. Horn, good to talk with you.
No, it's great to be with you. I've always been an admirer of you on television, and I'm happy to be with you on the radio now.
Well, things are going very well here on the Buckmaster Show on the radio, and we really are appreciative of your participation. Mr. Horn, we just had on our live line our border correspondent, Keith Rosenblum. You may remember Keith. He covered the Arizona Republic and Sonora for the Republic and for the Arizona Daily Star. He says in 30 years of covering Sonora and traveling, in fact, he was calling us from Sonora, he's never had any kind of an incident involving crime down there. So do you think the picture that Americans are getting of the escalating, as you call it, escalating threat from the Mexican drug cartels may be overstated to some extent?
No, I think it's understated, Bill. There's a very, very serious problem, and Mexico could become a failed state. The drug gangs have acquired so much power, and they're so vicious, as we see from the fact that yesterday they killed an ICE law enforcement officer.
Yes, Jaime Cepeda was killed. Yeah,
and you know, the invasion of the United States that's occurring is that they now have people in every major American city. Arizona is the pathway, but then they go to all those cities and. And it's not just drug smuggling anymore. They're going into all kinds of illegal activity. And there's a level of brutality that we've never experienced in the United States, at least certainly not in recent years, of a willingness to kill judges and law enforcement officers and police and so on with heavy armament. It's a very serious problem, and we've got to put a stop to it. And this was my speech yesterday that you may have read about in the Arizona Republic, where I talk about the necessity that we deal with the problem on both sides of the border, because we have to strengthen our border, but we also have to help Mexico defeat these gangs, because if Mexico becomes a failed state and northern Mexico becomes a staging area where it's controlled by the gangs, it's going to make life very difficult for us.
Yes, I have in front of me that story from the Arizona Republic, written by Dennis Wagner in this morning's Republic. And he says that you called yesterday. You were speaking, by the way, at a border security expo event.
Correct.
In Phoenix.
Yes.
And in that, during your speech, you called for massive public education campaign aimed at Americans who buy illegal drugs.
Yeah, you know, kids will not buy tuna if they don't have the proper nets to protect dolphins. They know the indirect effects of their purchasing. They have to realize when they buy drugs, that is funding these vicious gangs that are out to murder all kinds of people, kind of thing that if they become aware of it, I think perhaps we can get them to stop buying drugs and stop supporting the Mexican drug cartels.
It's interesting. You said that even if there was a what you call a perfect, miraculous wall on the border, it could not provide security because cartels now threaten to drive the U.S. neighbor and second largest trading partner into economic ruin in the next few years.
Yeah, that's correct. Now, that doesn't discount the importance of our getting a good wall up and protecting the border. That's of primary importance, and we've got to do it, but it's not enough. We've also got to help Mexico defeat these drug gangs. Because if the Mexican government fails and northern Mexico becomes a staging area for these gangs, then it means real trouble for the United States.
Well, this would be a good time, I think, Attorney General Horn, to segue into that Arizona suit that you and the governor announced at a news conference. This was the SB 1070 counterclaim, saying the state acted after federal officials didn't. How much hope do you hold out when suing the federal government? Very difficult process.
Well, the position I'm taking is that the federal government is not doing its job, and that they're trying to sue us to stop us from helping them do a job that they're not doing. And Congress has specifically stated in a number of different bills that the administration is supposed to get operational control over the border. They haven't done that, and they haven't done all that they could do to do it. And so they're violating federal law, and I'm asking the court to comment on it.
It's interesting. On the broader level, you are saying the United States Constitution requires the federal government to protect Arizona against, quote, invasion. Now, the word invasion does not necessarily mean, I guess, invasion by one country by another. Is that correct?
That's the position I'm taking, that just as war used to mean war between two countries, but now we have a war on terror, and the terrorists that have no country are as big a threat to us as anybody has been. Similarly, with respect to the word invasion, a huge number of people coming from different countries is really an invasion, and it's not an invasion by Mexico. You know, we need to work with Mexico, but it's an invasion by illegal people from a number of countries, and I think the federal government is obligated to help Arizona put a stop to it.
Let's quickly go over a couple of those other top stories that I mentioned, introducing you about you've moved to oppose the EPA on greenhouse gas requirements. An update on that, please, sir.
Well, my predecessor had joined with the federal government as an intervener on lawsuits that support the ability of the administration to put limits on greenhouse gases, acting itself and without Congress. You know, a bill on greenhouse gases passed the House of Representatives but failed in the Senate. And I feel this is a legislative issue. This is not an issue where the president should be able to act by administrative fiat. And so I withdrew Arizona from those lawsuits that in which Arizona had been supporting the administration in its ability to simply do by regulation that which it was unable to do through legislation.
We have a couple of minutes left here with Tom Horn, Arizona's Attorney General. A quick comment about the state to argue in the U.S. Appeals Court that the earlier ruling was wrong concerning gay partner benefits.
Well, it's really up to the people through their legislature whose benefits they want to fund in what they pay for with state employees. And so if the people acting through the legislature say they don't want to give benefits to people who are not married, I think the people have a right to do that.
Let's talk in the remaining 90 seconds or so about how do you like the new job?
It's great to get back to the practice of law. I practiced law for 30 years, as you know, as a litigator. And I sort of took 8 years off to be state superintendent of schools. But my legal background came in handy in a number of cases, including the United States Supreme Court case of Horn versus Flores that occurred while I was state superintendent of schools. But it's good to be back practicing law full time for the people of Arizona. That's really my profession. And much as I am passionate about education and continue to be very interested in improving the quality of our education, it's also good to be practicing law.
And I'm sure you're watching what's going on very closely at the state legislature. Too much emphasis on weapons this session, or what do you think?
Well, you know, I think when we talk about emphasis, sometimes we fall into the syndrome, which I call the can't walk and chew gum at the same time syndrome. You know, very often, if somebody would disagree with what I was doing, they would say, you know, you should be focusing on academics. And, for example, I wanted to get healthy foods in our schools. So the Arizona Star disagreed with me. So they said, instead of getting healthy foods in the schools, Horn should be focused on academics. Well, I was focused on academics, and as you know, Bill, I did a lot to raise our standards and to make schools, teachers, and students accountable, and to make the whole system more accountable and have higher standards. But I was able to walk and chew gum at the same time and do other things. And so I think that we should debate the merits of each issue on its merits and not say, well, you shouldn't do A, you should be doing B. You can do both A and B.
Tom Horn, I think it's important for you to be on the Buckmaster Show every 4 to 6 weeks, and we'll look forward to it.
Anytime you want me, I'll never say no, Bill.
Thank you so much. Tom Horn, Arizona's Attorney General, on the Buckmaster Show Live Line. We are coming up now on 45 minutes past the hour. Have a real literary treat in store for you next. Leslie Marmon Silko will be live with me in studio. Don't go away. Her new book, Flying Off Bookshelves in Tucson Stores, The Turquoise Ledge.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tanqueverde, at the southwest corner of Tanqueverde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tancredi, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website, sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub. It's 48 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. One of the top 15 books of the year in the 2010 Southwest Books of the Year competition, sponsored by the Pima County Public Library, is Leslie Marmon Silko's The Turquoise Ledge, a memoir published by Viking. The judges said Silko perfectly captures the rhythm of Tucson's season and relevance for its plant and animal inhabitants, and includes the whole universe in her musings. A Native American writer of New Mexico's Laguna Pueblo, Ms. Silko is one of the original recipients of the MacArthur Foundation grant that later became known as the Genius Grant in 1981. Among her critically acclaimed novels, Gardens in the Dunes, Almanac of the Dead, and of course Ceremony, first published in 1977. Ceremony remains the Native American novel which most appears in college and university classrooms around the country. Leslie, it's a delight to see you again.
Oh, it's great to be here with you.
Congratulations on the memoir. And I want to read briefly from the preface to the memoir. You say, a great deal of what I call memories are bits and pieces I recall vividly, but the process we call memory, even recent memory, involves imagination. We learn to ignore the discrepancies between our memory of an event and our sister's memory. We can't be certain of anything.
Well, I was working on the book, I would call my sister Wendy, my beloved sister Wendy in Wyoming, and talk about something, and then she would describe something that I had completely forgotten. But then I was also thinking about what they had discovered in particle physics, that you can either know the speed of the subatomic particle, or you can know its position, but you can never know both at the same time. So that there's a kind of unknowable dimension all the way down to the tiniest units of reality. And so that was what was in my mind when I wrote that.
Had you been thinking for a long time about this transition from fiction to reflective, introspective nonfiction? In other words, had you been thinking, well, maybe it is time I do a memoir?
Well, actually, the process was, it was sort of an accumulation over time, just for myself. It just would make me happy to jot down these little observations or, you know, experiences and things. And I really just did it for myself. I wasn't at least consciously thinking about, you know, doing a book of nonfiction like that. I had worked on some pieces on rocks. Actually, they didn't really get into this, but I finally, a couple of years ago, right after I turned 60, I decided, gee, I have these stacks of little notes and things, and there are some people, you know, in my life and from my childhood that I want to, you know, write about. And then the world is changing so fast, and I decided before I forget anymore, I should do it. And so the only way I know to make myself do something is to have my agent sell it to a publisher, and then you have to do it, you know. So that's how it came about.
I was surprised in your many journeys and hikes in the Tucson Mountains, really kind of your backyard, that there's turquoise in Dender Hills. That's well, where the name Turquoise Ledge comes from.
Exactly, exactly. Well, I was really surprised, too, although once you consider that Arizona's the copper state and we produce a lot of copper, and that turquoise is found in the presence of the ores, that copper ore and aluminums and things like that that are found along with the you know, in copper mining. And what it is in the Tucson Mountains, there are the all of the ingredients needed to make turquoise, though usually what you find hiking up there is what they call soft turquoise or chrysocolla.
I think the turquoise and really what I would call kind of your grounding place, that really the book is kind of built around, many of your little walks in the desert and the Tucson Mountains, and you would go one day and you'd observe something that, gee, how did that rather large piece of turquoise wound up on this trail? And you would say, I swear, I did not see this yesterday. And it's like every day, even though you're doing maybe the same ground, these new things would come up appear to you.
Yeah, at first it just happened, and then it made me think about how we human beings, especially in these times now, seem to have to have things new, not the same thing. And so I began to marvel at following the same path and seeing the change, that actually things are never the same. And just the other day, just a few days ago, I took a walk on my usual trail later in the day. And because the light was different, I started picking up all these little pieces of turquoise rock on the left-hand side of the trail. And I know I had to have walked right past them the other day, but just to notice how light, you know,
the luminescence was suddenly different at a different time of day.
Exactly.
On your trail.
And you see different things.
You come from a great storytelling tradition, the Laguna people. And for those that don't know, the Laguna Pueblo is just west of the city of Albuquerque. And it's where you grew up, and storytelling was really a part of your life. And as you say in Chapter 9, stories themselves have spirit and being, and they have a way of communicating on different levels.
Yes, I can remember as a child listening to the stories, and even now there are things that when I heard them in the stories didn't strike me, or they didn't seem important. And I realize now the beauty of the old stories is that they have elements there like little time capsules. And as we have more experience in life, and as we get older, suddenly there's a resonance with those elements that are, you know, that are in the story. And suddenly, there's a meaning there that that you never realized before. And that was how all of the history, experience, culture, everything was handed down at Laguna Pueblo, was by the spoken word and in the narrative or story form. Because it's easy to remember stories, and then by remembering the story, you're remembering the information that you want to access.
You grew up on the edge, really, of the reservation. You were essentially caught between two societies speaking English, never learning the language of the Laguna Pueblo. You talk about your mother's alcoholism, your Laguna Anglo-Mexican American heritage. It's all helped to shape what we now know as Leslie Marmon Silco. It really was kind of a unique childhood for a lady from the Pueblo.
Yes, I feel really blessed by you can't control where and when you're born, but in a way that I was, because I was born there, I would always have to have been a writer and a storyteller.
And you knew you wanted to write early on. I think you talk about early in grade school.
In grade school, it was very important, became very important. After the fifth grade, I could no longer go to school right at Laguna. The Bureau of Indian Affairs school ended, the elementary school ended after the fifth grade. And so the only alternative was either boarding school, which my father refused to inflict on us, or drive to Albuquerque, which was about 47 miles one way to school. And when I got to the little Manzano Day School, which is a wonderful school in Albuquerque, we chose it because it was on the West End and they had little scholarships for people like us. Anyway, I found that I was very far behind in mathematics and science, that the Bureau of Indian Affairs School wasn't that good. And I had been so proud of being a good student, and I was very discouraged. I can remember sitting in the fifth grade class. But we had a wonderful teacher, Mrs. Cooper, and she was very kind to me. And not long after I started in school, she gave us an assignment, which was to take the spelling list for the week, a list of words to learn to spell, and we had to use each one at least once in a story that we made up. And that was it.
The hook had been cast.
Absolutely. And I never have gotten over that ability to go in, and when you're writing a story, you're no longer in that room. You're no longer just your little self. Something wonderful and transcendent and expansive happened.
The world opened up in your mind.
Absolutely, and that's been it.
We've got about a minute and a half to go, and I do want to say that early on in your career, I mean, you were really a young lady when Ceremony was published, and it was such a huge hit. Was that kind of a double-edged sword, having success, so much success early in a career?
I don't think so. Not for me, because I don't trust. I try not to take good things or bad things too seriously.
Just accept
them the way they are. And my desire to write was so strong that I would have continued anyway. And the early success, after about 10 or 15 years, I started to get some income from the book, and that early success has helped finance my writing now.
Leslie Marmon Silco, the author of The Turquoise Ledge, a memoir, a pleasure having you on The Buckmaster Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. It's our pleasure. A reminder, The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger, and Associates Certified Public Accountants. Have a great day. That's going to wrap up The Buckmaster Show.
KJLL, South Tucson.